Good evening, everyone. Oh my goodness, is it Halloween already? I'm afraid that I've no idea what's going on in the studio tonight, but I do know that my name is Harry Balzac.
I know that I'm Wilma Fingerdo, and like my cousin Amelia Hawke, I ain't afraid of nothing, except maybe double negatives.
I'm Mia Harkness, and I'm afraid that Harry's already done something that I'm going to have to apologise for later on.
I'm still Huanker, and I'm afraid that it's likely to be me again.
I'm Norma Stockers, and I'm afraid that Harry's going to touch that switch again.
Oops. I quite obviously meant to press this button.
Pilots Federation members finally get the point.
Backseat drivers rumoured to be armed and dangerous.
Fleet carrier starbars unbarred as swirly pits vomit comet solved.
Vive la revolution! Hotbox are revolting!
Done but not forgotten.
The indestructible heart.
The name is Care. Huang Care.
All the community news that's fit to broadcast, and maybe a bit that isn't.
The Pilots Federation have sometimes been accused of missing the point. However, this time they've hit the mark and are on point. They've announced that they've been working on improvements for suits. Specifically, they finally worked how to add servo motors to the shoulders, elbows, and wrists so that communication between pilots will no longer be constrained to just crouching and turning. So you'll be more like Sigourney Weaver in Alien, rather than in Gorillas in the Mist. Italian pilots have welcomed this news with soon to be open arms, and stations throughout the bubble have started putting up No Mime Artist posters in all of the concourses. We understand that these modifications are in their early stages at the moment and so will not allow full freedom of movement, so don't expect to be seeing Cirque du Sirius performing their record-breaking human pyramid act on the surface of any planet, not even a low gravity one, anytime soon, not without the extensive use of Velcro, that is. From what we're told, with your new suit, you'll be able to wave, applaud, point, agree, disagree, stop, go, and of course, salute. The press release says that these gestures will be context sensitive, so we presume that you'll be able to engage sarcastic mode, where you'll clap when someone gets blown up, you can agree to disagree, choose how many fingers and which are extended when waving, and we look forward to the second iteration of the gestures where stop and go but can be used in intimate contexts for commanders who like to keep their suits on, and the salute will be extended to allow the full rimmer. We know that many pilots are quite fond of games. This may explain the quick creation of the wave, applaud, point, agree, disagree, stop, go, salute game, based upon the popular ancient game of rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock. Viewers and listeners should not look in the shops just yet, however, as it is estimated that it will take until 33:12 at least for them to work out the rules.
Calling shotgun when heading for your vehicle may be more appropriate than you think in the future, as plans are being drawn up for a new twin-seat combat SRV, but there's no indication at this point in time as to which side will have the steering wheel. Indeed, come to think of it, we don't even know if the spare seat will be at the side, hence the steering wheel question, or behind, which leads to backseat driver jokes, and the necessity for some kind of in-flight entertainment system on the back of the driver's chair to keep the passenger amused during long trips. The possibilities of this new arrangement are endless. You could have endurance races where you can change drivers back and forth as you get tired. You could have base raids where you can take a fleet of double SRVs into a base, drop off your passengers to create an on-foot assault team whilst the SRVs provide covering fire. Passengers can get out and push if you get stuck. You can create your own SRV taxi and earn rewards by picking up stranded pilots who are short of oxygen and get them back in the nick of time. If the design is modular, you could create your own bendy bus by stringing a load of cabs together or make a stretch limo for Hindus. Maybe the second cabin can have options, so it can be a cargo bay or hold an insulated container so you can be a delivery driver for McThargoids. We are not looking forward to giving Cecil a lift, however. We've seen what a mess he can make of the inside of a ship's cabin, and the last thing you want when you're driving away from dropping him at yet another bar that doesn't serve drinks is the sound of an empty gin bottle rolling side to side every time you turn a corner, convinced that this would be the turn when... Now that's going to take some cleaning up. Excuse me.
You may remember that a few weeks ago we were talking about the social spaces on megaships and the problems with fitting abyss-proof glass needed to protect your delicate psyche from the sight of witch space to fleet carriers. Details are sketchy at this point, but it appears that the work has been done on creating vomit-suppressing glass for megaships has borne fruit, and that this can be adapted for the car transporters of the sky. We think that this is likely to result in passengers disembarking from their ships and wandering around the halls, queuing for meals as soon as the fleet carrier sets off, sneaking down to the duty-free shop when the spouse isn't looking, and forlorn messages coming over the tannoy.
Could the pilot of the Diarrhea Brown Anaconda registration HU770N please return to their vehicle and move it, as it is preventing other commanders from using the large pad. We are now arriving in our destination system. All pilots should return to their vehicles and prepare to disembark.
As soon as we have news of the exact facilities to be made available for fleet carriers, we'll let you know, and suggest that you invest in shares of whoever makes the fittings required, as they're going to shoot up in value once the hanky clones start outfitting their fleets.
Nominations close today for the next Hotbox leader, the Hot Boss, and, well, the turnout was a little, disappointing, with only two of you bothering to nominate. On top of this disappointing turnout, we are treated to a lovely slice of boredom, as both nominators went for the same option. This is where things start to get interesting. Instead of nominating someone from among their ranks, both have requested that Hotbox becomes a republic. Well, sort of. Both nominators coincidentally had exactly the same idea at exactly the same time. They want Hotbox to be run by its Council of Elders. If you haven't heard of the Council of Elders, they are made up of some former Hot Bosses and venerable and learned commanders from across the Hotbox community. It's a big step moving from a cruel and all-powerful, if temporary, dictator to a benevolent ruling council of worthies. The Hot Boss voting process can cope. The vote will go ahead as a simple vote for or against the nomination. This gives everyone a chance to vote as they would normally. To vote, you must be a member of the Hutton Group and be an Xbox commander. Please PM either myself or Andrew Swaziland Swaysland with your vote. You're either for or against the leadership of Hotbox being taken over by the Council of Elders. Voting will open after the show and close on Thursday, 7th of October. The results will be announced on next week's Hutton News. Well, that's it from Election Central.
There are rumours reaching Hutton Orbital that the dastardly Don Antonacci has left his family villa on Wolf 359 and has taken everything, including the light fittings, with him. We spoke to him earlier today and he left us a message.
This is the Don, sending a message to all of you trackers. This is it. I have had enough. I don't want to play no more. You win. I am taking a leaf out of the big book from your apology, officer, and boarding the enormous half and going to Beagle Point. I've left Don Presto in charge, and he's far more scary than me. I have never known a bunch of mother truckers as confusing as you lot. But I'm a gentleman. I like a challenge, and you truckers are a proper challenge. Now, you keep your hands off of my villa. Mama is still there, and you do not want to cross Mama. I did that once, and I could not sit down for a month. It has been a pleasure to know you all, and don't you go thinking that me leaving means you've won. I just have a new business venture that demands my attention. Lots of love. The Don.
Giuseppe, will you please put away that big beam laser? We don't need that anymore. Yes, you can take the chainsaw. Don Presto, fetch my matching luggage.
There have been some complaints recently that someone has given Thard the Mighty the secret formula to wheat meat wheat cakes, and that consequently he's had three for breakfast each day, and that this has made his heart indestructible. The Pilots Federation has disputed this finding and say that they know for a fact that Thargoids, of course, enjoy a lightly toasted escape pod for their first meal of the day. Don't, of course, eat the canister, but it's plunged into boiling lava until it glows cherry red. But it may not look red to us, given that the Thargoids do, after all, live in an ammonia atmosphere, and who knows what particulates their industrial history has left to float around. And then, as the pod pops up to the surface, the distress beacon gives a ping, and the Thargoids scoop out the now-cooked interior. The Thargoids call these hot pockets, and they have become increasingly popular as their scientists have managed to inject various flavourings. I digress. Look, we are talking about the indestructible heart of Tharg. The Pilots Federation have had their scientists working on this problem night and day, and depending on which planet they're on, that can be a very long time. And I've promised that the issue is not that Tharg's heart is indestructible, but their weapons were using old oscillator coils, and that once they've been replaced, Tharg, and of course his minions, will be susceptible once more. Now, this comes as no surprise to us all here at Hutton. Indeed, we've known all along that there must have been a mistake. Everyone, including, of course, Commander Beetlejude, who created this splendid illustration, knows that there is only one indestructible heart in this galaxy. And that huge item belongs to Commander Sally, who daily toils in the Pilots Federation salt mines with a smile on her face and a cheery quip for everyone, regardless of how much they deserve it. Long may this continue.
There's a party going on in George's pants, and everyone is happy again. Nay, not just happy, but elated. I'm not quite sure we know exactly what went on in George's pants to get from happy to elated in under a week, and I'm pretty sure we don't want to know. Well, not on air anyway. Elsewhere, all Hutton systems paint a swathe of blue across the Hutton main master situation control monitoring board. Everywhere is at least happy, with not a cloud on the horizon. Citizens in Y0855-0714 are even having a public holiday. So that'll be the water filters needing repair again next week. This week, only three systems are below 40%. Earlier in the week, Barnard Star recovered marginally as no other factions were squabbling, but an election between the second and third place factions had put the brakes on, and it has settled on 34. Epsilon Eridani is still sitting on 38 after recovering from its recent outbreak of space lurgy, and is joined there by Wolf 1481. Last week's pirate incursions were chased out of both Wolf 359 and PSPF-LF2, only to be scattered into Avic, Alpha Centauri, George's Pants and Ross 671 from where they were similarly sent packing before they could have much effect. At the top end of the systems league, we have seven systems above 60%, with the hot boxers pushing Van Manen's star to 77. Come on, you lot, give your opposable thumbs a rest. Stop trading so much and go and zap some plants. Oh, no, you can't. I'm sorry. Now I'm getting filthy looks from the apology officer. Or is it the hot boss election? Anyway, meanwhile, His Grace, the Grand Kazi of Colonia himself, Arch King Prince Earl Hanky, asked that truckers work for Hot Colin Tear to relieve the famine and civil unrest. Jeez, trouble always comes in pairs in Colonia. Speaking of pairs, truckers should stuff ballot boxes and gerrymander those jerrys like they've never been mandered before in Pythias, where we have an election pending against Ed's 38 for the third faction slot. Get on that podium. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, boost Hutton influence in Barnard Star and Wolf 1481. If you want to shoot something, help sort out the civil unrest in Pythias, so there are a few less mouths to feed in the famine.
If you're looking for updates about community-led events, you've come to the right place. And as usual, links will be posted in Twitch chat and also in the description of the YouTube upload. A long time ago, in a galaxy not very far away, the Comfy Cannon crews, based aboard the Fleet Carrier Consul, started along the 124 waypoints of the Cannon Challenge, and I can only presume that it must have seemed sensible at the time. Commander Mephisto, who probably wishes he'd charged his passengers by the light year for the ride, has sent us this update.
2 days of jumping brought Kunshu from the Tritium refuelling site near Beetle Point to waypoint 77 of the Comfy Cannon Cruise. Here at the following waypoints up to number 81, where the cruise is currently, many varieties of astropods as well as trees were featured. We had Cerium, Punicium, Rubella, Proscinium and Lindigoat. Oh, sorry, that's a different song. These systems lie far from the centre of the Milky Way in a region of very sparse stars, and each contains an Earth-like world. On tenuous atmospheric sibling planets, passengers could get a feel for how the sky might look and admire the awe-inspiring view of the galaxy. Tomorrow, Kunshu will move about 1,500 light-years to some tasty triple-overlapping tritium hotspots to completely refuel.
Expedition All the Clouds in the Sky has been pursuing nebulae like they're going out of fashion, and Commander Diluvian has brought us news of their progress. It took a little bit of effort, but eventually, on Thursday 23rd September at 15:06 Zodiac time, our carrier arrived at Amundsen Star. An unforgettable view and always a thrill to watch the galaxy from this angle and distance. Amundsen Star is actually not a very big system, but it does have some very interesting features, e.g. three water worlds and one notable stellar phenomena composed of a Lagrange cloud and a small population of varied gyre trees, stolen pods. There is only one landable planet, however, and it does not seem to have any biological forms. We've pushed another 25 jump towards Angosk OMWD10, better known as Suppositus Beepin. As the name suggests, it sits there at the edge of the Piraeus Fade like an abandoned lighthouse, and with stunning 45,374 light-years, is thought to be the most distant reachable system from the centre of the galaxy. Visited first in January 3302 by Commander Ollett Nil, shortly after the discovery of advanced FSD boost technology, it is still only reachable with a fleet carrier or a ship with a massive 700.65 light-years jump range. After the visit, we jumped back to find a suitable location for refuelling. We stopped at Usk's IC BT-UD2-1, where Commander Draco Mender found a ringed gas giant with tritium hotspots. It will be a longer stop this time. We need to recoup around 9,000 tonnes of fuel. Once we are done, next waypoint 3, Geminorum. Big thanks to Commanders Dracomender, Hazard 6S, D Rainwater for all the mining efforts. P.S. The good news is that Commander Kalidas Akoma, who for unknown reasons got left behind in the bubble, is already on his way to support the crew. He still needs to cross the entire Kepler's Crest to get to our location, but he will get there. A little note for the time zone confused amongst our audience. In Diluvian's reports, Zodiac Standard Time is Eastern Standard Time, and Sol Time is UTC. Clear now? No, me neither. If you like to zig when the rest of the galaxy zags, then go and zag away, and you say you've been everywhere and seen everything, Commander Infernal Moose has some useful information.
It's been another exciting week on the Great Galactic Circumnavigation Infernal Expedition. Last week we reached Magellan Star, the easternmost system in the galaxy. While there we held a variety of social events including SRV races, ship races, SLF races around the carrier, and even on-foot races for those able to exit their ships. The on-foot commanders were also able to take stunning pictures on the rim of an atmospheric crater with the entire galaxy as the backdrop. We were also able to gather in the nearby notable stellar phenomena in this system to commemorate the beginning of Leg 2 of the expedition. The commemorations unfortunately went a bit far when all the ships surrounding Commander Sleepy Weasel's T9 suddenly decided to boost, resulting in Commander Sleepy Weasel's T9's rapid and uncontrolled disassembly. Much blame goes to the tons of Centauri Megagen which went missing from the carrier's stores. Since leaving Magellan Star, we have travelled another 33,000 light-years for a total of about 80,000 light-years since we left Gebel almost 2 weeks ago, and still have about 140,000 light-years ahead of us. Commander Solandri's carrier was able to meet us again and provide the remaining ships and modules in stock on his carrier for the expedition crew. Over 250 modules and all of the ships for sale were purchased. Big thanks again to Commander Solandri. Exploration continues to be the main activity for the expedition crew, with over 3 billion credits of exploration data sold to Universal Cartographics on the carrier since we left Gebel. There have also been countless NSPs found along our route through this region of space. The expedition also experienced its first unexpected rapid return to the bubble when Commander Pendeja inadvertently picked the free Sidewinder when his ship was destroyed. More impressive, however, was his commitment to return to the expedition. Commander Pendeja is a very new pilot without many resources or access to engineering, which is making his return even more amazing. In the course of a day, he was able to put together a DBX designed for long-range gather materials at the Jameson's crash site, unlock Felicity Farseer, upgrade his FSD, and board the Pillars of Gulu, a carrier bound for Colonia, captained by Commander Axel Argon. He has since arrived in Colonia and is making his way along the Neutron Highway to Sagittarius A, where he will board the Unknown Vessel, the first expedition refueling carrier, which will take him the final 25,000 light-years to meet with the expedition on Monday. Kudos to Commander Pendeja for not giving up. A number of other commanders are also joining the expedition along a similar route. Anyone still wishing to join the expedition is welcome to board the Unknown Vessel parked next to Explorer's Anchorage.
If you think you're going to be bored after October the 11th, you love Earth-like worlds and you're looking for something to fill the following 6 months, then Commander Chiggy von Richthofen's expedition will suit you down to the Terra Incognita, as the commander explains.
I hereby invite any and all commanders to join my great Athletic World fishing expedition. The fully outfitted fleet carrier USS Saratoga will depart from the bubble, presently located at Scar D1, on October 11th and proceed directly to Zuneo KU-DD13-3764 in the Empyrean Straits region of the Galactic Core. Upon arrival at the destination system, all registered participants are invited to compete in a 6-month-long Earth-like world hunt to conclude on April 11th. To those commanders interested, I will offer prize money in-game credits to be distributed by way of the carrier market to those who place first, second, and third in the competition. A grand prize of 20 billion credits will be paid to the overall winner, 10 billion to second place, and 5 billion to third place. Other prize money of lesser amounts, to be determined before launch of the expedition, will be paid to commanders for discovery of any single Earth-like worlds, which are expedition records in various categories, also to be determined before the launch date.
And that's this week's summary of community-led events. If you want yours to be featured, just email itookpart@huttonorbital.com and we'll get in touch.
And that was the news. We're going to do some chatting in a moment, but don't disappear. The fun's not over yet. Stay tuned for brand new Gownet News Digest, Flossie's roundup of the CG News, Hutton Sports Report, and of course, this week's act of courage and daring as Amelia tackles one of the galaxy's most rare and dangerous items, so you don't have to. And all of that comes up after what we in the trade call the talky bits.